Hello, my name is Rob Bennett. I'm the author of a book entitled Passion Saving, The Path to Plentiful Free Time and Soul-Satisfying Work. I'm also the publisher of the PassionSaving.com website, and I'm working on a second book entitled Investing for Humans, How to Get What Works on Paper to Work in Real Life. This is podcast number 129. I'm recording it on Friday, April 25th, 2009. The PE10 level today is 15. That's fair value. Stocks purchased at today's prices offer a strong long-term value proposition. The music for the podcast is by Kevin McLeod at Incompetech.com. The title of the selection is Porch Blues. The title of the podcast is Are Middle-Class Investors Too Dumb to Invest Effectively? That's an insulting title for a podcast. But it's an issue that's come up many times, actually, in the first 7 years of the Great Safe Withdrawal Rate debate. It's an issue people don't like to talk about, one of those taboo issues. I did a podcast a few back, Taboo. I remember it came out very clearly in a thread where I had a discussion with Larry Swedrow. Larry Swedrow's a financial planner, and he's written a number of books. And he was at Vanguard Diehards, and I have it somewhere in my files, but I remember it because I remember you're able to give a title to your post at Vanguard Diehards, and or at least you were then. I think they've changed the system. But Larry had said, you know, we were going back and forth, and of course I'm always pushing for valuation-informed indexing at that board, and just in general, valuation-informed strategies. And Larry agrees that valuations have a big effect on long-term returns, but he can't openly say that passive investing is wrong. I don't know. I'm sure that he knows there's problems. I doubt that he knows the extent of the problems. I think a lot of the experts sort of block that out. They don't want to know, and so they don't know, because they don't study it. But Larry said something or other, and I said, look, you know, we need to help people. We need to advise them. This was before the stock crash. And I said, there's going to be a stock crash. You know, people are going to lose their retirement money. Larry, you know, we got to do something. He said something about, oh, you know, I have to protect them. You have to protect, you know, I know that valuations affect returns, but I have to protect my... And I said, I said, this is patronizing. And I wrote, as the title of the post, I put, Lord, protect us from our protectors. You know, the investor's prayer. Lord, please protect us from our protectors. Because I don't think they're protecting us. I think it's an excuse. I don't know to what extent they really believe they're protecting us. I think it's a rationalization. Bill Bernstein has said things to this effect. He said, you know, he favors a very limited form. He does, to Bernstein's credit, he does favor a limited form of valuation-informed investing. He calls it dynamic rebalancing, something like that. And there was a guy, Microlepsis, who argued that the word he used was hypocrisy. He says it's hypocritical for you to point out the effect of valuations and then say that sticking to the same stock allocation makes sense. And Bill took offense to that. He said, well, it's not hypocritical. But he sort of acknowledged that there was something a little not right there. And he sort of said, well, you know, people will misunderstand, whatever. There's this feeling among professionals that if they tell the full story, we're not going to understand, and we're going to do these terrible things. The way it's usually presented is that if they let us know that timing is a good thing, short-term timing, as if you're a regular listener, you know, short-term timing probably does not work. There's lots of evidence short-term timing does not work, at least for the average person. Long-term timing, the evidence shows it always works. And it's hard. I'm not capable of imagining a circumstance in which it wouldn't be a good thing. Long-term timing is just changing your stock allocation because prices are out of control, lowering your stock allocation so to limit your losses. But not expecting a benefit in a year or two, understanding that it may take 5 years, possibly even 10 years, before you see a benefit for doing so. And the thought that people are afraid to express it, but the thought that seems to come out is, if we tell people it's okay to change their stock allocations, they'll be doing it for the wrong reasons. They will be that'll make them feel okay about engaging in short-term timing. You know, instead of lowering their allocation at times of high prices, they'll be raising them. They'll be saying, "Oh, the expert said it's okay to time. I'm going to raise," and then they'll do the opposite. When prices go low, they'll be lowering their stock allocation. In other words, they'll do the opposite of what's right. I don't know that there's anyone I can point you to that spells it out crystal clear, but I've seen many people suggest this. Another one was Michael Kitsis, great guy, financial planner in Maryland, based out of Maryland, and I had lots of correspondence with Michael at the blog. And at one point, Michael doesn't really follow passive investing. He advises changes based on valuations, so he's not an advocate of passive investing. But he's a little hesitant to say how bad it is, or at least he won't agree that it's as bad as I say it is. Let's put it that way. And he seems to get a little uneasy about the subject. And at one point he said, look, you know, he said a couple things. He said he said a number of things to me. One, he said he talks to, of course, a lot of financial planners. He's in the field. And he said a lot of them are having doubts about passive investing or about the efficient market theory. So, you know, there's a lot of people talking about this behind the scenes. I think it's the great unwritten story. I mean, I talk about it all the time, but some enterprising journalist, I mean, who has more influence than I do, you know, somebody at the Wall Street Journal should pick up on the story and write an article about financial planners thinking of abandoning passive investing or abandoning the efficient market theory, because Michael told me they're talking about it, and I know it's true. I've talked to enough people, I can tell. I know it's true. That doesn't mean they decided to do it, but they're toying with the idea. And if you go by articles pointing out that the efficient market theory is discredited, in the days before the stock crash, you'd see two articles like that a year. I'd always get excited when I'd see one. I'd say, I used to get so excited. I remember Peter Bernstein is, what did he write? Was it Against the Gods, I think was the name of his book on risk. Great guy. Very well-respected guy, and he gave a speech where he said, you know, we're in an era now, we're gonna have to start timing the market. He was laying it out. This was years ago. I don't know how many years back now. Oh, goodness. 4 or 5 years. And it was a great speech, and it was picked up in the Wall Street Journal, but you know, I got so excited when I saw that. I was like, finally it's out in the open. This is what I've been dealing with in the retire early community, the indexing community, and now it's out in the open. Who can deny it now? Peter Bernstein, well-respected guy. But boy, it comes out. There's a little flurry, you know, a day or two, and then it just dies. Nobody wants to talk about it anymore. And of course, Shiller's book put this right on the table. You know, Shiller's book, great success. They all reviewed it, you know, mostly positive reviews. Shiller himself said, he wrote an afterword to a later edition talking about the comments he received, and he said, I don't get many comments about the ideas, really. People seem to go along with it. They don't, or at least they don't dispute it. He says, the comments he got were that maybe he was discounting the possibility that the economy had entered some new golden age, something like that. Which not too many people are saying today. So, you know, if that's the only problem with Shiller's book, well, then we ought to be going with Shiller's ideas today that valuations really do affect long-term returns, but we're not. People are still recommending passive investing, which says you don't need to make allocation changes in response to big price swings. So we're in this weird twilight zone, and I used to get excited when somebody like Peter Bernstein would come out and make a speech, but, you know, over time I came to learn, and then Money Magazine, I remember, did an article once. This, again, was a long, at least 4 years ago. This was at the Safe Withdrawal Rate Research Group, and that board's been shut down for several years. And Money Magazine ran an article. It was just a one-page article, but it had the title, What If Everything You Know About Investing Is Wrong? You know, and it was right on point. And there've been a number of them. But since the crash, there's like three of them a week. Used to be you had one or two a year. Now there's three a week. So I feel the steam is going to build up. All that a smart journalist would have to do is notice all these articles coming out and put the pieces together and say, hey, I'm going to call some planners and start talking. You know, have you noticed that people are saying the efficient market theory is dead? If it's dead, well, then passive investing's dead. Are you going to change your advice? Are we going to rewrite all the books? But everybody is scared to take that step. It's something where you can't take the step by yourself. You've got to march in you know, with a lot of other people behind you, or you get your head cut off, as I learned to my chagrin. But so the question is why? You know, why don't we just talk straight with people? You know, obviously everybody doesn't. I don't expect everybody to agree with my particular take on things, but I think it would be fair to say we should be telling people the truth about safe withdrawal rates, and there's no argument on the safe withdrawal rate question. The numbers are wrong. Numerous big-name experts have acknowledged this, but there's never been an effort to get the old-school studies corrected. That's weird. And so you have to ask yourself, why? Why do all these smart and good people not make any effort to get these things fixed? And the feeling you get, I mean, you can offer different things, but one of the rationalizations they put forward is middle class investors are just either too dumb, or you know, the other way of saying it is they're too emotional. And the feeling is it took us decades of work to drill it into people's heads not to time the market. You see, the idea that you shouldn't time the market, that's a genuine insight. It's a very important insight. It's one of the most, possibly the most important insight in the history of investing. I mean, maybe not number one, but it's up there. I tend to rank it number one personally. It's a breakthrough. And of course, most people today don't even follow it. You know, I don't know what percentage, but it's a high percentage today that at least if you took a poll and said, is it a good idea to time the market? I'm confident that the majority would say no. Some obviously try to do it, but they tend to be sophisticated investors. But the average, you know, Joe or Jane America, you know, that puts money in a 401k does not try to time the market. Some do. I don't say zero, but most do not. Most are just sort of putting their money in, and they've heard the slogans. They, you know, I call them marketing slogans. You know, don't, you know, timing doesn't work, stocks for the long run, stay the course, all this sort of thing, buy and hold. And they think it must be true. They've heard, you know, it's like an advertising slogan. You hear it a million times. You think there must be something to it. Maybe it's not perfect, but it must be generally true. But, you know, of course, the constant pitch at passionsaving.com is it's true that short-term timing is a bad thing. You know, raising your allocation because you think stocks are going to do well in the next 6 months, or lowering your allocation because you think stocks are going to do poorly in the next 6 months, is genuinely a bad idea. So says Rob Bennett. And I think a lot of the experts, and the experts that I tend to talk to, I have to say, also in fairness, it tends to be the cream of the crop. I mean, you know, there are lots of people out there who aren't even telling people that short-term timing doesn't work. And those are pretty much the only people I place any credence in. So I don't really even get involved with people who are telling you, you know, hot stock tips, you know, Jim Cramer. I mean, I have nothing against Jim Cramer as a person, but and there's nothing wrong with a sophisticated investor trying to look for stock tips, but the average person, I don't think should be doing that. It's my opinion, but you know, you're entitled to your own opinion. I think that is a judgment call, but that is my particular judgment, is that that's right. And I think a lot of these people feel it took a lot of work and a lot of marketing and a lot of money and a lot of time to persuade people not to time the market. And now we've had some success. That idea has clicked. And boy, now we're going to tell people you can time the market, or you should time the market, or you must time the market. I think that's a big part of it. Now, you know, when I phrase it that way, it sounds like they're trying to do the right thing. And I do think that. I do believe that the people who are hesitant to shoot straight on investing, and I think that's the right way to say it, they're hesitant to shoot straight. They're hesitant to tell people that we have 30 years of academic research showing that valuations affect long-term returns. The studies date back to 1981. I think, you know, to some extent, they're rationalizing when they say we can't understand, we can't do it right. But to some extent, I think they're genuinely concerned. I don't think it's all one or the other. Now, my opinion is it's patronizing. Even if it were true that we're too dumb or too emotional to do it right, even if that were, I don't think that's true. But even if it were true, it's still their job to tell the straight story. You know, we don't need them protecting us. That's, well, maybe it's my journalist background. You know, it's sort of, it's the type of thing a politician would say. We need to protect the public from this information. And a journalist is, you know, let's release it. Let's get it out. And so I just come at this from a perspective of I'm not interested in being protected. Tell me what you know, and I'll decide how to protect myself. You know, that's my job. But there is let's present the other side to the extent we can. In fairness, there are some historical facts here that argue for the so-called protection idea. There are millions of people today investing in 401ks who don't really want to be doing so. This is sort of what makes this all go around. There are millions of people today who, in the old days, they didn't have to invest in stocks. Their employers provided for their pensions. And they didn't have to invest in stocks. And they did it because they don't like it. Stock investing is scary, first of all. It's intimidating. I saw an article the other day about, they had a name for one of these syndromes, and it was from Britain or something, but it said something like, 20%, literally, freeze up on the idea of doing anything related to money. Or maybe it was 10%. I don't know. But they just can't stand even, opening a checking account. If it has numbers in it, I'm not that bad. But I understand. I fully, relate. There was a day when, I didn't like doing this stuff. And so I know other people. I know there are other people like that. Lots of them. And so the question is, if you're going to show up on television and somebody's going to ask you a question, it's like they asked Robert Shiller recently. This is the dilemma. They asked Robert Shiller. It was a great interview somebody did with him. I don't remember who did it. I think it was Yahoo, but Henry Blodgett did the interview. I think it was for Yahoo, but I can't swear to that. But it's a video interview with Shiller. And the question they were asking him is, what should people's stock allocation be today? Mr. Valuation informed investor. And Shiller, he didn't want to answer the question. And ultimately he did. And he said, I'm going with zero. He said, I'm going with zero until prices fall a good bit more. I did a podcast on that, but and I get asked that question just from friends. They know what I do, and they come up to me and they say, "Oh, Rob, you were right about stocks. What do you think we should do now?" And I hate that question. It's everybody's favorite question, and I hate it because there is no five-word answer. I say at the beginning of every podcast, the PE10 level is such and such. Stocks offer a strong long-term value proposition, but that leaves so much out. It leaves out the fact that the odds are we're going to see another 50% price drop. And if I told say that I made that my tagline, say that I started off every podcast by saying, the The odds are, it's greater than 50% chance we're going to see another 50% price drop. How would the average person interpret that? They'd interpret that not to be in stocks. They'd say, oh, this guy believes don't be in stocks. And I don't believe that. I don't believe in being fully invested in stocks, but I think stock investing is a matter of probabilities. We never know what's going to happen. What we're able to know is the probabilities, and the probabilities change with changes in valuation, and the probabilities were horribly against you from 1995 through 2008. Today, the probabilities are on your side. You know, they're not totally on your side, but, you know, my take on it is you might want to go with a 50% stock allocation, but there's always variations and it depends on your circumstances. It depends on how much you lost. If you lost a lot of money, it might be the best to just get out of stocks altogether for a year and spend a year learning about the flaws of passive investing so that you'll feel more confidence in what you're doing. That's the other part of my advice. And you can't get that all in, you know, in five words. And people want a five-word answer. That's true. When you say, you know, are middle-class investors too dumb to invest effectively, I think that's an insulting question. I think the answer is no. Middle-class investors are smart people. If they weren't smart enough to hold a job and to save money, they wouldn't be worried about investing. So the very fact that they're worried about investing tells us they're smart people and they're capable of doing well. But it is true, you know, we are responsible for the questions we ask. And we do ask that dumb question. It's not a good question. You know, what should my allocation be? Because there's no good answer. And the proper question is, what should I be thinking in setting my allocation? That gives the person answering a chance to, you know, give a couple little, more than five words. And then you've got the whole picture and you can, you know, whether your retirement plan is going to succeed or not is worth more than five words, okay? So we have a role in this. And a lot of the experts are, of course, they're aware of this. You know, they see this every day. They get asked, you know, I get asked these questions. They get asked a million times. And so they've concluded, I don't know how much this is thought through, how much it's just sort of, you know, seat of the pants. I don't know. But they've concluded that the best thing to do is pretend that passive investing makes sense, because it doesn't. And it's hard for me to imagine they're not aware of the literature. And the literature has showed that it doesn't make sense for 28 years now. Doesn't make sense to be strictly passive. How much you want to change your allocation in response to price changes, that's a different question. That, there could be legitimate differences of opinion on. But there is no argument that there's no need at all to change your allocation. I've investigated this in great depth, and I have never seen any argument that a strictly passive approach makes sense. Never. The only thing you could say is if middle-class investors are genuinely incapable of timing the market effectively, if all they can do is mess up because they're so emotional, then I guess in that case, passive makes sense, you know, sort of as a, you know, they're just, as a, well, like the title of the podcast says, they're just too dumb to do any better. But I think that's wrong. There's actually one guy at Vanguard Diehards pointed me to a book one time, and he said, oh, you know, read this book, and he told me the page, you know, he said, and basically it was a book for financial planners, and it was basically where they agreed to do this. But unfortunately, I wanted to read it, and I looked the book up on Amazon. It was incredibly expensive. It was like $200, and I didn't want to spend $200 just to read one paragraph. I asked the guy, could you just tell us what it says? But I think he was afraid, you know, there were a lot of smear campaigns going on then over people who reported this stuff, and he was afraid, so he didn't answer. But it'd be interesting to know how detailed that book was about whether there really was some kind of agreement. I don't know. I'm not saying there was. I'm not saying there wasn't. I don't know. But I get the feeling. And it comes up with Bogle all the time. There's threads going on this right now in Vanguard Diehards. Because what Bogle often does is he'll say, oh, people should be, I have to warn you. You know, before the crash he did this. You know, I'll have to warn you. You know, and of course, the hip people, the people that know that there's 30 years of evidence showing passive can't work, they, when Bogle comes out and says, I have to warn you, they lower their allocations. Because what does, why else would he be warning you? What's the purpose? But if anybody says, oh, by warn, do you mean we should lower allocations? He says, oh, no, stay the course, no. My favorite advice is stay the course, you know. But he never says, does stay the course mean change your allocations so that your risk level stays the same, or does stay the course mean stick at the same allocation and your risk level is going through dramatic changes? That comes up all the time. So I think it's a rationalization when they say they're trying to protect us, but it has enough truth in it that my guess is the rationalization does, to a significant degree, fool the people using it. In other words, I think that a lot of the experts really do sort of believe that, and there is something to it. It's not right to say there's nothing to it. There is something to it. But you see, what I think is going on is they're using this rationalization because, you see, the financial incentives are enormous to promote passive investing. Passive investing is what people want to hear in a huge bull market. And you know, Michael Kitz has pointed out this whole industry is a new industry. This financial planning industry is a relatively new thing. And the industry got off its feet during the time when passive investing was being discovered. And when we really didn't have this literature showing that it's wrong. So a lot of people were excited about passive investing and the efficient market theory, and they believed in it. They really believed in it. Now they still sort of kind of believe, but they're, you know, not so strong anymore. They know there's weaknesses, and they're scared to death to come public because they know it's going to set off a firestorm. You know, people are just going to be crazy when they find out, what, for 30 years you knew this, and I lost all my retirement money, and you could have told me? You know, what kind of expert are you? But you know, the longer it goes on, the worse it is, because, you know, people are just, you know, gonna say, you know, if they had done this before the crash, it would have been better. But, you know, it's an old story. You know, once you start to spin things, it gets harder and harder to reverse the spin, to correct it. I remember when I was a kid one time, and I changed the grade on my report card, and I, you know, my parents caught me, and I got in trouble, and I, you know, after I turned it back in, I realized how stupid it was, because you had to return your report card in, I think, 4 times a year. So I would have to change the grade back. You know, I'd have to erase it and put in the different grade when I gave it to my parents to sign. And then when I gave it back to the teacher, I'd have to erase it again and change it back. And then when it came back the next time, I'd have to erase it again. There was no way that was going to work. I was a stupid kid. But that's sort of where we are on this passive investing thing. There's no way that I can see that this can continue indefinitely. It's destroying the economy. It's causing millions of failed retirements. There's a long record of this on the internet. You know, every post is in post archives. You know, there's board bannings because people try to tell the truth about safe withdrawal rates. And then people suffer busted retirements, and that's not going to cause a problem. It's awful. It's just a disaster. And people should have thought of this in the beginning. But see, what happens is, in the beginning, valuations were low. And so I think a lot of people said, oh, maybe the efficient market theory is not quite right. But, you know, who's it going to hurt? You know, it's only a little. But the problem is, it started out, you know, John D. Craig used to say, oh, it's just a white lie. It started out as a white lie. You know, when the P10 level was 8, it was a white lie. But when the P10 level was 44, it wasn't a white lie. When the P10 level was 44, the most likely long-term return on stocks was a negative number. And the advisors were saying, you know, go with high stocks, stocks for the long run, buy and hold, you know. Oh, my goodness. That's a mess. And I think this idea that we're too dumb to do better is a rationalization. But as I say, I think they see enough emotion on the part of their clients that the rationalization does give them some comfort that what they're doing is acceptable. They say, oh, you know, if we were to really tell the story, people would do the wrong thing. At least this way, they won't be going with higher stock allocations when prices are insane. At least they'll stay at the same stock allocation. And you know, at least when there's a crash, they won't go to zero. They'll be staying at their same stock allocation. But of course, the reality is many people are going to zero. In other words, now that passive investing has failed, people aren't sticking. Taylor Larimer's talking about going to zero. He's the author of the Bogleheads Guide to Investing. What's his name? Bill Bangin, financial planner out in California. He went to zero, took his clients to zero. They both say that they're still passive investors, but it's hard for me to figure out how they are, since passive investing says you're not supposed to do that. I think it's an unsustainable situation. I've always felt that way. I've always felt this was just Looney Tunes. But I've tried to learn, you know, I've tried to figure out, you know, what's really going on. And I think what's going on is they believed it in the early going, and then they needed to market it. It wouldn't work unless it was marketed. So they put lots of money into marketing it. And they persuaded themselves that what they were doing, it was maybe a white lie, but it was necessary, you know, because people just don't understand. And then, of course, it produced good results and people were cheering them and they marketed even more. And then by the time they started to get nervous about it, and I do think some got nervous about it before the crash, but by then they were in so deep, they said, we can't turn around now. You know, it's too late to stop now. And now we've had a price crash, and now, holy moly, you know, you're going to come out, you're going to say, turns out that you do have to time the market. Sorry, you know. Oh, my goodness. But the question for the podcast is, are we too dumb or are we too emotional? In other words, are they right? Are they doing the right thing? And I say they're not. I don't think it would be the right thing, even if we really were too dumb. It just rubs me the wrong way. I'm a person, you know, this question comes up when doctors, you know, if you're going to die, you have some incurable disease, some people say the doctor should spare your feelings, you know, not tell you. Oh, I can't bear that. You know, in other words, if I'm going to die, I want to know. Don't ever, you know, tell me some happy talk. And I feel the same way with my money, my retirement money. It's like, if I'm going to hand in a resignation from a corporate job thinking that I've got enough money to live on, and you're going to tell me that a safe withdrawal rate that's wrong because you want to spare my feelings? No way. No way. Uh-uh. Tell me the straight story. I'm responsible for a family. You know, I've got kids and a wife depending on me. And if you give me the wrong numbers, you know, I'm up the river. So in no way do I support the idea, but it is an interesting question. Are middle-class investors capable? If they were told the straight story, are they capable of behaving properly? Are they capable of investing effectively? Which means not engaging in short-term timing, which is what people have always done in the past, or tried to, but to engage in long-term timing, which is, and of course, another reason why this is unsustainable is a lot of people are talking about it now. Even on Bogleheads, there are threads where people are saying, oh, I engage in long-term timing. And they don't ban it today. They let them say it. They don't recommend it, and they won't let them say that the old-school studies are wrong. There's lines you can't cross, but they let them say, I do it. And of course, if that continues, more the word's going to get out. So right now, you've got a small number of investors investing effectively. Let's say 5%, 10%. The word's not going to get out? How are you going to keep that locked up? You know, I have calculators on my site show how much better it is to engage in long-term timing. And it's just, you can't even compare it. You can retire 5 years sooner. You're making one change, which only requires one allocation shift every 10 years or so. I mean, you're not going to tell people this? Plus, the entire economy's in a crisis because of passive investing, because we didn't sell our stocks when prices went to insane levels. That's what caused this crash, which is what caused the economic crisis. So, the idea that we're not going to tell people, it just blows my mind. But if it were true, that we were incapable of investing effectively, you could at least say that there's some argument for not telling. And there is evidence that there is evidence that many middle-class investors are highly emotional, look at our boards, you know, look at the great safe withdrawal rate debate, all the board bannings. Those board bannings, I used to think it was just John Graney. When I started, I thought John Graney is destroying this board. Why? Because a lot of people were very positive. A lot of people, you know, thought the discussions were wonderful. And I, you know, and I'm like, why are you destroying this board? And I certainly, I think he exploited the situation, but it's not just John Graney. No way, no how. That's clear at this point. As I say, he exploited it. I certainly don't approve of what he did. But it's bigger than that. It's bigger than that because, you know, you could even argue at Vanguard Diehards, they didn't know John Graney, so why would they care? But they did. But you could argue that maybe they had some affinity because Mel Lindauer was also pushing passive investing, so there was sort of an affinity there with John Graney, even if they didn't know him personally. But, like, I, you know, just recently they took a thread down at this, two threads they took down at this Money Bloggers Network, and they don't have any connection with John Graney or Mel Lindauer, really. I mean, maybe a little bit with Mel Lindauer. I think some of them do advocate passive investing, so they might know about the Bogleheads, and they, you know, they might sort of have a little bit of affinity there, but not enough to explain what we saw. So, it's not Graney. So, there is a lot of emotion. This, I think, is a documented fact. Middle-class investors are highly emotional about stocks. When prices are high, they want to be told fairy tales. They want to be told that high prices don't cause stock crashes, that stocks are not insanely risky at times of high prices. Millions want to hear this. And of course, the stock selling industry is like any other industry. You know, you have to market to sell your product. You have to market to stay in business. I mean, you know, people might mock that. They might say, it's not right. Well, I don't think it's right, but I don't know. It's like saying, you know, telling somebody a used car is a good bargain is not right. You know, if your job is to sell used cars, what are you going to do? Say, this is a piece of junk here. The reason the price is so low is because a piece of junk, it's not going to last. You know, your job is to sell used cars. So there's lines you shouldn't cross. You know, you shouldn't change the odometer. You know? But you shouldn't sell a known lemon. But you sort of have to engage in a little bit of puffery. You know, you do, is it wrong to give the car a paint job? Is it wrong to, you know, make it look shiny and nice? Well, I think a lot of the people in the stock selling industry would say, oh, we're making stocks look shiny and nice when we say, oh, you know, it could go up. Could go up, you know, yeah, prices are insanely high, but it could go up some more. That's true. When in 1995, prices were at a P10 level of 25, that's insanely dangerous, but they sure did go up. They went all the way up to 44. They could go up. And, you know, they say, oh, in 30 years, you'll get your money back. That's true. In all likelihood, the data supports that. So I think they rationalize it. They justify it. And they're causing a lot of troubles, I think, for everybody, including themselves. I just think it's a bad thing all the way around. But the one thing that they can say in their behalf is there's an awful lot of emotion. And the question here, I'll give you my take on it. My take is there's no lack of intelligence. That I don't see at all. Obviously, there are dumb people in the world, you know, but I don't see any problem. You know, it's not a problem. People that are investing, middle-class people are holding middle-class jobs, and the whole investing's not that complicated. God bless John Bogle for coming up with a simple way to do it, index funds, but, you know, that's been done. We've got index funds. With that, you know, and a weekend's worth of work, you know what you need to do to invest in stocks. So that problem has been solved. It's certainly true there are millions who don't want to spend a lot of time on it. That's a fact. But that's solved, really. You know, I could do it all in one podcast, tell you everything you need to know. So it's not like you need to spend a year studying this stuff. But the emotion, the emotional reluctance to letting in the realities, it's a thing to behold. It's amazing. It's so far beyond anything I could have ever imagined. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen in my lifetime. It's more amazing than man walking on the moon. It really is. It's just stunning. Once people become emotionally invested in stocks, they do not want to know the realities. Doesn't matter whether they're mathematical calculations. They do not want to hear it. Doesn't matter if the logic is 100% rock solid. They do not want to hear it, and they will not hear it. That's fact. Verifiable fact. You can check our post archives. So that's, you know, I think that's what a lot of the experts are going by in their rationalizations. They're saying, hey, we're doing the best we can. We don't dare to tell people that some forms of timing work because that's all they need to hear, and they're going to start going back to short-term timing. How are we going to stop it? Now, my belief is, I'll tell you my belief, and, you know, others are going to have other beliefs. I'm telling you what I believe. I believe that the emotion comes from the fact that passive investing does not make sense. I have a podcast that addresses this in a sort of roundabout way. I call from a ways back that I called Common Sense is the Problem. In other words, when we start to believe that there's no need to change our stock allocation when prices go to insanely dangerous levels, we're believing something that is preposterous. And we know that. On some level of consciousness, I think each and every one of us knows it. And that's what causes all the emotion and all the anger that follows. We know it, and we're betraying ourselves to deny it to ourselves, to deny this reality when we're investing our money. And it gnaws at us. And so what happens is, Freud examined all these psychological phenomena. When somebody comes onto a discussion board and starts quoting the historical data, it enrages us. Because there's no argument with it. It's so clear. It's so blunt. It's so rude. You know, it's like walking up to somebody and saying, I was talking to your doctor and you have incurable cancer. You're like, what? Get away, crazy man. You don't want to hear that. You don't want to hear you've got incurable cancer. And it's not a person who meets you in a store. It's not his place to tell you you have incurable cancer. It's the doctor's place. But I think on a discussion board, it is my place and the place of all community members to tell others the truth about investing. It is our place to do that. But if you have been engaging for 20 years in a fantasy that it's not necessary to time the market, and somebody comes along and shows you that if you fail to time the market, you're likely going to see a loss of 68%, you're going to be enraged. You know, those five stages of grief, the first stage is anger. Anger. That's a natural reaction. Now, I, of course, knew that. You know, a lot of people would say, oh, Rob's a troll. You know, he's deliberately, what's the phrase they use, disrupting. Well, my view is, I certainly was aware that people got upset. You know, I'm not an idiot. I was aware that people were angry. I feel it's wrong not to tell people. I think the very fact that people got angry underlines how important it is that they hear this information. And of course, some people didn't get angry. Some people loved hearing it. So it was a minority. It wasn't a majority that loved it. But if it's 10% of the board community loves it, do they not have a right to hear it? If they're not hearing it anywhere else, do they not have a right? In other words, it's not me who disrupted. The disruption came about with the phony baloney passive investing gibberish. That's where the disruption came about. It's sort of a time-delayed disruption. It put us all on a track where we had to put these blinders on and tell ourselves tall tales. And of course the tall tales are going to be exposed over time. And of course we're going to get angry and upset. But what if we stop doing that? What if we stop doing that? Then what? This is the other side of the mountain. I have a phrase that I use. I've used it many times on discussion boards. I say, you know, when we open up the boards to honest posting, that's when the real fireworks begin, the good kind. And what I mean by that is, and I don't think the experts get this part. When my experience, of course, I didn't know this. Understand, you know, I knew that the safe withdrawal rate studies were wrong back in the mid-90s. But I never knew all the rest of what I talk about in these podcasts and at the website. I never knew all the rest of it, you know, until the great safe withdrawal rate debate started in May 2002. So I didn't know this. But, so what my experience is, I eventually worked up the courage to tell the truth about safe withdrawal rates. You know, it took a lot. I was scared. And I eventually did that. And once I did it, there was no getting out because this was my community. I'd spent years building up this community. These were my friends. And, before I told the truth, I could rationalize not helping people by saying, I'm not really sure that I'm right. And most people seem to think I'm wrong. And, you know, why not just let them have their discussions? You know, that was a rationalization too, just like the experts are rationalizing. I was doing the same thing. But, you know, we do these things. But once I had gone forward, I think it was day 6 when John Walter Russell did his research showing that I was right. He did a sensitivity study. It was at that time, it was very crude compared to what he's done since. But it was clear that those studies were bogus. There was a guy, you know, who came on and said, you people are idiots. You're going to use this to plan your retirements, and that's what the sensitivity rating is? This is crazy. And this guy knows this, and all these big-name experts can't figure it out. John Bogle, Bill Bernstein, Jonathan Clemens, Scott Burns. They can't. This guy on a discussion board who I never heard of before, I think it's the only time he ever posted, he could figure that out. And these people, you know, that's hard to swallow. But once the guy said that, how am I going to then say, oh, I'm going to say the next day, oh, safe withdrawal studies are okay, they're good? You know, once you've said they're wrong, and see, in the early days, it was just my opinion. But on day 6, it was verified by the data. So at that point, first of all, I'd be lying. I mean, it wouldn't just be rationalizing. It would be a flat-out lie to say I think these studies are valid. And secondly, I'd be betraying John, who had done the research showing it. What am I going to say? I think his research is wrong? When I have absolutely no grounds to think that. And third, I'd be betraying my fellow community members because I know they're going to suffer busted retirements if they follow these wrong numbers. And fourth, I'd be betraying my own desire to learn, which is the whole reason I built the community in the first place, to learn about the subject matter. And obviously, this is an area where we can learn huge things if we explore a totally new model of how to invest. And so I really feel I had no choice from that point forward. But the point is, once I started down that path, oh, the things I learned, you know. And this is what I think a lot of people have a hard time swallowing it today. Some of those people at the Money Block Forum, I think the reason they're angry, it's not really passive investing that they're angry about. Although I think that's part of it. I think a big part is just they say, how did this guy get so smart? You know, presuming I'm right. I think some of them don't really know. They don't know if I'm right. Most of them. I shouldn't say some, most, or possibly all. They don't know if I'm right. I think they know I'm making a good case. But they're thinking, I've seen people say this. They say, you make a great case, Rob, but you can't be right. Because all the experts say otherwise, or at least not all, but 90% of the experts say otherwise. You can't be right. And I think that's how most people feel. They say, yeah, it sounds good what you're saying, but it can't be right. It's too big. It's too big to be right. You know, you're some guy on the internet, and you discover this. I mean, it just doesn't seem possible. And of course, it's not true that I discovered it on my own. There's literature going back 30 years, but most people have never read this literature. They count on the experts to tell them what the literature says. They don't read. Most people don't read it firsthand. So They find it hard to believe I'm right, but they think I'm making an interesting point, but they're really annoyed that they think I'm coming across as smarter than them. And that just, you know, it's a human thing. You know, who do you think you are? And I don't want to come across that way, but I just can't help it. I can't not say what I know, and what I know is at odds with what 90% of the experts say. And it's not a matter of opinion. Some of it is a matter of numerical calculation. So it's, you know, my confidence level in it is very high. Not in everything, but in much of it. And so what I'm saying is, you've got this weird dynamic where deciding whether valuations affect long-term returns or not is deciding whether to go passive or to go rational. I call the alternative rational investing. When you make that choice, it's like a fork in the road. You take a different path from that point forward. You develop what I call X-ray vision, which means everything you see, every article you see from that point forward has a different appearance because of the things you've learned. In other words, learning is cumulative. This is the key. Learning is cumulative. And for 7 years now, I've been accumulating knowledge on a path that very few are walking. You know, Robert Shiller walks this path, and Rob Arnott walks this path, and John Walter Russell walks this path, and others. I'm not the only one, but let's say it's 10% of the total of people writing about stock investing. 90% have never been down this path. You know, maybe they peeked in every now and then. You know, William Bernstein, he wrote a chapter in his book on this path, so he spent a little time peeking in the window, and John Bogle taught me where stock returns come from, so he must have spent some time on this path. You know, he had lunch in the restaurant, but neither of them spends all their time exploring this path. So they don't develop the insights that I develop and that some others have developed. Schiller and Russell and Arnott and so on. And so in order to really persuade them, I'd have to take my brain and stick it in their brain and say, look at this wonderful stuff. And it's, you know, you can't, how do you put the brain in somebody's head? In order to get them to look at the wonderful, it's a catch 22. To look at the wonderful stuff, they have to be persuaded, you know, to go down this path. But to go down the path, they have to know that there's wonderful stuff at the end. So it's a catch 22. So what most people are doing is they're taking the course of least resistance, which is, you know, we've been telling people passive and we're making millions and people are happy with us until the crash, anyway they were. So why rock the boat? This is good enough. Well, you know, why rock the boat? That, you know, they might start, if we tell them that long-term timing works, they might make mistakes. They might engage in short-term timing. We've seen a lot of emotion. You know, it's better just to stick the way it is. They're not thinking ahead to the disaster. And now we've seen the disaster, and now, of course, they don't want to acknowledge their role in causing the disaster. So we've still got a catch-22. Maybe the catch-22 has changed, but it's still there. But the root question here for this podcast is, if, let's just say, in a magical world, Rob Bennett waves a magic wand, and they all start telling the truth about stock investing. You know, there's 20 people get on the stage Monday morning and tell us, hey, great news, long-term timing works. You know that data that showed us that short-term timing doesn't work? It shows that long-term timing does work. Hallelujah. Now, look at this. We've got calculators. You can retire 5 years sooner. This caused the stock crash. We can get out of the stock crash. We don't have to have future stock crashes. We now know. What if they did that? Would people then go back to short-term timing? I say no. I say no. Would they be tempted? Yes. Yes. You know, it's like asking, are people going to be tempted to eat chocolate cake? You know, that's always going to be there. But I think the reason why Bogle's investing ideas became as popular as they have is that Bogle comes across as prudent. People are looking for something like that. They're looking for something that's not a get-rich-quick scheme. They're looking for something that's not financial porn. These middle-class people, they know they have to invest in stocks. And they don't want to lose all their money. They want security. They want stability. They're open to a positive message. And they love, you know, there's so much good stuff in what Bogle says. And, of course, they love it for good reason. But the passive thing is poison. And I think the whole Bogle message is going to be destroyed if we don't come clean on this. It's I think we're playing with dynamite here. It's a tragedy that this is happening. It's a tragedy not just because of the losses we've suffered. It's a tragedy because of the opportunities we've forsaken by going down this path. People want to invest effectively. And if you tell them, they are they capable of understanding it? Look, they're not, you know, this is what? Podcast 129. They're not going to listen to 129 podcasts by Rob Bennett, okay? The average person is not going to do that. But if the entire stock selling industry were pushing this message that short-term timing doesn't work and that long-term timing does work, yes, people would eat it up with a fork and spoon. People would love it. And people would get it and people would follow it. Not everybody, but a lot of people. In other words, I don't think there's anything pie in the sky about thinking that middle-class investors can invest far more effectively than they do today. Far, far more effectively. I truly believe this. But they need to have that message reinforced. It won't work, you know, if I say it or even if a big shot says it. You know, if John Bogle said it and he only said it one time and then went back to advocating passive investing, it wouldn't work. It has to be a message that is what people need. What's lacking is confidence. Confidence. And, you know, I do think it's sort of a reality. I wish that people didn't rely on gurus as much as they did. People need to think for themselves, but investing is intimidating to a lot of people. And they don't want that responsibility. And maybe they're willing to take on some, but they really want what they're doing to be verified by an expert. People really, that part is true. You know, that's not really being dumb, but if you want to call it that, to that small extent, it's true. People want that verification very, very, very much. But if the experts were pushing this, it would click. In other words, you can't hear that long-term timing works from one guy or two guys or three guys. To believe it at a deep level, you need to hear it from 50 guys and women. If that were done, it would work because then people would believe it and see the way. And I've gone through this experience personally. I've gone through this. I'm like everybody else. I'm a middle-class investor. I once believed in passive investing. I'm not any different than anybody else. I'm certainly not more intelligent than the average middle-class investor. You know, I think I'm probably average. I don't think I'm dumb, but I'm no better than the average. And I didn't learn this in one day, you see. See, I know that. I think a lot of people, they think that if the arguments are good, it should persuade people in one reading. And that's I have learned that's just not the way the human mind works because I've personally experienced it. What happened is it was like the peeling of an onion. What happened with me is, as I say, I learned a little bit. I learned that the safe withdrawal rate studies were wrong. And that got me thinking about some other things. And then by a year later, I was able to take that layer of the onion skin off. And then I started looking at how valuations affect long-term returns in general, not just in retirement. And I spent a year on that. And then I took that layer off. And then I started thinking, well, why don't people react well to this? Does that suggest that there's a lot of emotion? And then I spent a year thinking about the emotional side of investing and how that's connected with the fact that we don't talk about valuations. And then in a year, I understood that. And then I started thinking, well, if that's so, well, You know, why is it that we have all this bad information? Why do the experts not feel comfortable saying what they know? And I started thinking about, well, they have to make a living, and this efficient market theory was very exciting when it first came out, and they want to simplify, which it's important to do. That's not a stupid thing. That's important, and they have noticed that their clients are emotional, and the clients do want a guru, and it did take a long time to persuade them not to engage in short-term timing. So, you know, I spent a year on that, and then I got that piece. Then I started thinking, well, all this seems to fit. What are the strategic implications? You know, what does this mean about risk? Does risk work the way they told us that the higher risk asset class always provides the better return? I said, well, actually not. It doesn't, does it? And you know, more. Well, how about young investors? Is it true that young investors don't need to worry so much? They say that if you're close to retirement, you should lower your stock allocation because of the risk. But younger investors don't have. Is that true? Well, as it turns out, no. Young investors can get killed if they don't worry about valuations. See, all sorts of things. One question, solving one question brings to mind another, brings to mind another, brings to mind another. And what we need to do is to get the entire nation involved in this learning, this huge learning process, including the experts. They don't know it. They don't know it. They're not dumb, but they haven't gone down this path because it's viewed as a dangerous path. It's viewed as a taboo path, and they're scared to go down it. They know some. They get, you know, they get little bits and pieces. But if we open those floodgates and we all start going down this path, it's just going to be an explosion of golden insights into how investing really works. It's going to change the history of personal finance, I believe, quite sincerely. If is the biggest word in the English language. If we do this. But there's, you know, and I've thought it through every which way you can think it through, and there's no downside. There's no downside, not to one person alive. Is there a downside? Not to one person alive. It's all upside, no downside. It not only helps investors, reach their goals much sooner. It's easier to believe in because it's actually simpler because you don't have to try to believe crazy stuff. It all fits common sense because every asset we buy, price matters. Thinking it doesn't matter with stocks just sends you into this weirdo land where, you know, you get defensive and you get angry and you know, you rationalize. All of that goes away. And it does away with the insane bull markets, and it does away with the insane bear markets. It does away with the crashes. It helps stabilize our economy. The benefits are just, they're overwhelming to think about. See, I don't think the experts are deliberately denying us that. That's too much to believe. I don't believe that. I really don't believe that. But I do believe they know that there are issues. I am firmly convinced they know there are issues. I've seen lots of evidence. They know that there are problems with the existing model, but they don't want to open Pandora's box. But in this case, Pandora's box is all good things. It's all wonderful stuff. I'm telling you from somebody who's been there. So what we need to do is we need to try to reassure people. You know, we need to talk to our friends and talk to the experts and just, you know, talk to the website owners, talk to the blogs. The blogs have a great opportunity here because it's really hard for the experts to do this because they've got, you know, financial considerations. But the blog owners don't have financial considerations. All they've got to do is please their readers. And the readers would love to learn this stuff. It's very exciting. And, of course, it's controversial. You know, people have never heard this. Most people. Some have, but most have never heard it. So, you know, you get a great reaction as long as you do something about the abusive posting. Because some do get angry. Some feel threatened. Big shots feel threatened. You know, people who've spent 5 years preaching passive investing, they feel threatened about this. So you have to deal with that. You know, you want them to participate. You don't want to exclude them. But you have to draw some lines about what sort of behavior is appropriate. But my experience is the middle class people love this. They eat it up if they are protected from abusive posting, and two, they're allowed to ask lots of questions. No, I really don't think anyone has ever bought into it on one read. I don't think I've ever seen that happen. Just doesn't happen. The closest to whoever did that was, what's his name? Artie. Artie was investigating indexing, and he found my site on the pros and cons, and he gave me a call on the phone, and we talked for an hour, and I wouldn't say he was totally bought in, but pretty close. He bought in pretty quick. But that's rare. That's rare. Most people, you know, some of course are hate it. It's like garlic to a vampire. You know, they can't stand it because they're threatened by it, because they believe in passive investing and they can't stand to think they're wrong. They can't stand to think they've been fooled. They've been made fools of. But the usual response is they're intrigued, but they're skeptical. Intrigued, interested, but highly skeptical. That's the common response. And what those people want is they want a safe place to talk about it, and they want to ask lots of questions, and they don't, by in any case, want to buy in one day. They want to gradually be exposed and consider and come around. And if you let that happen, it happens. It works. It works. And so I think, to the extent the experts are worried that middle-class investors are too dumb or too emotional to invest effectively, I think they're wrong. But they're right that there's a lot of emotion out there, and there's a lot of misinformation out there. And the only way we're going to change that is by opening these floodgates. But once people can engage in back and forth, they do get it. But they will not come around in one day. No way will that happen. No way will that happen. But in a year, yes. And it's all good on the other side. It's all wonderful for everybody. So I think the experts are worried about something. To the extent they're really worried about it, I mean, I think they are really worried about it to some extent. I think to some extent it's a rationalization. They don't want to suffer the financial losses that are involved in telling the straight story. That's a big influence, I believe. An influence they may not be entirely aware of, or even at all aware of. You know, human beings are great at blocking that sort of thing out. We all tell ourselves that, you know, we all like to entertain a positive view of ourselves. Rob Bennett included, of course. We all do that. And they rationalize by saying, well, if we told the full story, they would mess up, you know, the poor dears. And the reality is, there's something to that. We do need to take the emotional thing into consideration. It's not a foolish consideration, but we're not poor babies that can't handle the truth. We can handle it. We need to hear it, and we need to hear it from more than one person. It has to be a lot of people. This is why I say we need a national debate on the realities of stock investing. We need to turn this around. We need to praise the people who came up with passive investing for all the powerful insights they put forward. But we need to be firm about saying, look, this idea that no one should be changing their stock allocation, that's a loser. That needs to go. And that means that all the calculators need to be redone and all the books need to be rewritten and all the articles and speeches and all this. But so what? That's an opportunity. That's an opportunity to learn, for the experts to learn and for the middle class investors to learn. It's a win-win-win-win-win. Once we accept that we're going to go that path, it's going to be great. I believe it's going to be great. And yes, we're capable of understanding it. And actually, our confidence will be much greater because, you see, rational investing is self-reaffirming, because the farther you go into it, the more everything fits, the more everything makes sense. Whereas with passive, it's the opposite. The deeper you go in, the more defensive you get, and the more uncertain you get, and the more angry you get, because it doesn't fit. And there's always some sort of evidence coming out, and you're like, ah, you know, you want to bash it down so you don't have to hear it, you know. And it gnaws at you. But with rational, it always gets better, because the market performs the way you're expecting it to perform. You're not hit with these surprises. You never know precisely what's going to happen. I'm not saying that. But you know the range of possibilities, and the results are always within that range, and so they don't shake you up. And you, of course, set your allocation based on that range. So your results are in tune with what you were expecting. You don't have these wild, horrible events like the stock crash that just come out of the blue and destroy you for no reason. That doesn't happen anymore once you learn the realities of stock investing. So we're not too dumb. We're not too dumb. We need the experts to have a little more faith in us, but of course, we have a part to play. They will have more faith in us when we start demanding that they have more faith in us. You know, I think we may need to take the reins here. We may need to start making some demands. And they will. I believe a good number of experts will be responsive if we demand straight talk in firm and uncompromising language. Kind, charitable, polite, respectful, loving, but firm. I think that's the way to go. And, great stuff can come out of this. I know a lot of people are bummed out because of the stock crash. And look, the emotional healthy thing is to understand this. We can turn this into a good thing. It doesn't have to be a bad thing. I've got a calculator at my website that'll tell you how to make back all the money you lost in the crash. Not overnight, take 30 years. But if you start investing effectively today, you can make back that. It's as if you had made back all that money. You won't have it in your pocket until the end of, 25, 30 years, but you'll know that the historical data says the odds are you're going to actually end up making that all back. So you haven't really lost ground. In other words, you lost ground in the crash, but you can make it up by learning a better way. And how will you know that that better way works? Are you going to take Rob Bennett's opinion on it? No, not if you're a rational investor. You're not going to listen to some guru. I'm not even a guru. I'm some guy who posts on the internet. You shouldn't listen to any guru. You're surely not going to listen to some guy who posts on the internet. So how are you going to know? You're going to check it out with all these other people. Bogle and Bernstein and Burns and Clements and, on and on and on and on and on. We're going to have a national debate. And if there's any flaws in what Rob Bennett's saying, we're going to find out. So you're not going to have to take it on faith. But you got to get in there and educate yourself, and you got to start asking questions. And that's how we turn it around. Good luck with your investing strategies.